Welcome to episode 289 of the Women of the Military podcast. This week, my guest is Sheila Buswell. Sheila shared how the military helped her overcome imposter syndrome in her own life. She decided to join the military after losing her scholarship for college and having to work both nights and go to school during the day. With the help of the Army, she knew that she'd be able to go back to school after her service commitment. She served in the Army for 4 years and left with medical discharge and was able to go back to school and use her GI Bill to become an engineer. Today, she is the CEO and founder of Buswell Biomedical, and she is also the author of Is This Seat For Me? Before we get started with the interview, I want to remind you that you can listen to Women of the Military podcast on Reefs Across America on Fridays at 7 p.m. Eastern and Saturdays at 11 a.m. Eastern, and you can listen on iHeartRadio, the TuneIn app, or Odyssey. Now with that out of the way, let's get started with this week's interview. Welcome everyone to another episode of Women of the Military podcast. I'm really excited to have Sheila here. I'm really excited to have you as a guest. We got to see her actually a couple months ago. She was in my Women Veteran Recognition Day episode. So now we get to hear not only about what her military service means to her, but also what her military experience was like. So welcome to the show.
Thank you, Amanda. I'm happy to be here and thank you for having me.
So let's start with, why did you decide to join the military?
I joined the military because I lost my scholarship. I had a scholarship to the University of Utah that was tied to a high GPA, and I did not maintain that high GPA. So I worked for a year at night and went to school during the day, and I didn't sleep nearly enough. And one day I just was like, this is enough. I had done something that I was like, meh. I need to make a change. And I had always run cross country and stuff. So I was like, went for a long run. And I was like, I grew up on a military base. And I thought, I need to get, you know, I don't get to go on long runs enough. And I liked doing that. So the next day, I walked into a recruiting facility. And the rest is history.
So you walked into the recruiting facility. And then you were like, I'm going to join. What branch did you pick?
U.S. Army. I picked the U.S. Army. My dad was in the Army. He went to Vietnam, and I grew up on Army installation, but by that time he was a test officer. So, I mean, I was more familiar.
Yeah. Okay. So Army was kind of like your comfort. And then when you went into the recruiting station, did you know what job you wanted to do, or did you just know you wanted to join the Army?
So I have, and I'm wearing my contacts now, but I have really thick glasses and I have degenerative myopia. So that limited, I had to get a waiver for my eyesight, and that limited my military occupational specialty significantly. So I ended up a 63 Julia, a chemical equipment repair, and that's not functionally what I did. I was a generator mechanic, but I had a relatively high ASVAB and general technical score, so I could do most jobs because of that, but I was limited by my eyesight from doing most jobs, and from the Air Force, it turns out. So looks good that I picked the Army.
So if you had been to the Air Force, they would have been like, nope, get out of here.
Yep.
Okay, so you got limited in like your job, but it sounds like you found something that you could do. So how quickly from when you went to the recruiting station and then you went to basic training?
Ooh, I don't remember. Months. I would say 4 months. It was pretty quick.
And what year was it when you went in?
I joined the Army in 1997.
4 months isn't that bad. It's like just enough time to like figure out what's going on and, you know, not enough time to talk yourself out of it, I think.
Lots of people attempted to talk me out of it, but I am kind of mulish. Like the more people who did that, the more I was like, nope, this is what I'm doing. And my dad was never tried to talk me out of doing it, but he was like, my mom 100% was like, are you sure? Because I don't, you know, I am outdoorsy, but I don't follow direction well. I've always had an issue with authority, but I didn't have that issue in the military. As long as I accepted the authority, I was like, okay. But yeah, there was lots of notes home about me not following directions.
Yeah, but you were looking for something and then you found the Army, and I think a lot of people, you know, you understand like the structure and the order of like the military hierarchy. So even if you don't really like following the rules, I don't like following the rules. People tell me to do stuff and I'm like, yeah, I'm going to do it my own way. But I was great in the military. So I think that's normal.
I think in the military, this kind of is going to get kind of, but I ended up training as a cross training as a generator mechanic. And in the military, I found that if you're proficient at your job or at the job you're doing, people, for the most part, listen to you and leave you alone. And there are people who don't. I mean, people are people in the military. There are jerks out there, but there's a lot of good people. And most people are good and most people will listen to you. But I did have moments where I was like, yeah, I can't wait to get out, thinking that it'll be this out is this magical place where everybody listens to you.
So after four-ish months, you headed off to basic training. And what was that experience like?
So there was so much. I worked for a year before going into basic without enough sleep. And I was like crazy thin. And I don't know. I was probably malnourished. I don't know. So when I went to basic training, I ran cross country. I've always been, and I was at a high altitude, right? So I was really good runner. I had, you know, physically I was fine, but I wasn't accustomed to people yelling at me, and my personal space was a thing. And I think that was the most challenging part of basic for me, but those things ended up being really valuable to me later on in life. Like, okay, if you have a drill instructor that has three ranger tags yelling at you, when you have a squishy, like, engineer yelling at you 40 years later in your face, it really doesn't have any effect on you. You're like, yeah, I'm not really. You're just bigger than me, which isn't really an accomplishment. I had a guy made of granite, like, who was scary, do that to me when I was 20 and, you know, half the size.
And I survived. So it kind of gave you a life experience for the future that where it didn't bother you.
Yeah.
But it can be a little intimidating and scary. How did you, like, were you just determined to get through basic training, or did you have like the support of the unit to push you through? I mean, some units you have a lot of like support, others it's a little bit more challenging, but what was that whole experience like?
I was really determined to get through. And I'm just going to say, when I went into the military, I had this preconceived notion about people. I went in the military at the time where people still had the option of going to jail or going to the army. And I was going into that. So I had this idea in my head that, I don't know, the other people who joined the military were this type of person and I didn't belong there. So I met people in the military that were crazy smart, crazy funny, and I realized they joined the military for all sorts of reasons. And I realized how short-sighted my initial idea was. And I valued people differently after that experience. And I think so many things in the military teach you to depend on other people. And basic training was that. Like, it was challenging in so many ways, but that was the first time I had a battle buddy, and it was like, oh yeah, this part is hard, but my battle buddy can do it. So she helped me with the parts that I thought were hard and she thought were easy, and vice versa. And together we muddled through.
I think that's such a great lesson you learned from the military. And I like to do a lot of things myself, but I know from my military experience, like, how important it is to, you know, work as a team, hear other people's perspectives, and then, you know, push forward. But sometimes it can feel a lot easier to just do it myself, but then I have to remind myself, like, we're a team, we're actually stronger together. And I think the military does a really good job of teaching us that. And then, you know, like, using it through your whole career. It's not just at basic training. That's where it starts, but it continues the whole career.
I think basic training, and one of your previous guests talks about, does a good job of changing who you are and making you just better. Like, I had confidence, but I did look at the world differently. And there's so much that I looked at differently simply because of basic training. They do a really good job of getting people who are not physically fit, physically fit, getting people who are thin, you know, to put on weight, getting people who have weight, extra weight, to shed it, and changing perspectives. And I think, as well as teaching people who aren't used to showering every day to shower every day and brush your teeth and put together an M16 and put on your gas mask or whatever, all the other things.
And they're good at it because they've been doing it for years and they just keep refining it, and it works really well. It's true. So after you graduated from basic training, you probably went to AIT. So what was that experience like?
AIT was, again, just a new experience. It was a little bit better than basic, but there were still drill instructors that were scary. And they were really good and tough at what they did. But what I really liked about AIT was that is when I started to be able to be like, it's more like school. And that's where I shined. Like, that's my jam. I can remember stuff and I can figure out how stuff works really well. And I was physically proficient at doing those at the physical aspect, but now I could show off that I could excel, you know, with my cranial, like with the schoolwork and like the troubleshooting. And that's really where I shined. And I have to say that the mechanical electrical troubleshooting I learned at AIT was, again, you get lots of equipment. You're able to put your hands on equipment that they don't let you touch for years outside the opportunity.
Hands-on experience. I mean, just like as an officer, you're leading people at a really young age, and that's not something you get to do in the civilian world for a long time. And so in the military, yeah, you get to like touch things and work on things that usually you have to have a lot more experience. And they're like, go do this. And yeah. I remember, yeah, you do get to do a lot of cool things because they need people, and they train you and they expect you to know how to do it. And they put a lot of responsibility and trust into you at a young age. What base did you go to for your assignment?
So I was in Germany, bomb holder Germany. And then we deployed. I had pinpoint duty assignment to Heidelberg, which they were deploying to Bosnia. So that took priority and they needed one of me. So I went there and, you know, I was injured in deployment to Bosnia that ended my military career, right? I have foot issues to this day as a result, but I've learned so much as a result. So, yeah.
So your career kind of ended unexpectedly.
Not unexpectedly. The military was always just going to be a stepping stone for me. Like, I was just going to go back to school but I needed college money. But I signed up for 3 years. I had to do 4 years to get my medical discharge. And my dad, who was in the Vietnam era vet, was like, there's always going to be another war. Stay in, get the medical discharge. And I was like, Dad, that's ridiculous. I'm getting out early. I've been accepted to these schools, blah, blah, blah. He's like, no, stay in. And I don't know why. I was 22 or something. And I was like, never listened to my dad, but I listened to my dad that time. And right after I got out, 9/11. So 20 years of war later, I'm like, yep, he was right, you know, but.
Yeah. So you stayed in and were able to get the medical discharge, which is so important, and then go on with your next career. So when you joined the military, the education benefits were one of the, like you said, the community, and you knew about it, but was the education benefit something that you knew about and was like a big driving factor, or did you learn about it when you were on active duty?
Oh no, the education benefits is why I joined. I lost my scholarship and I was like, I gotta pay for school. How am I gonna do that? And I didn't take out student loans at that juncture. I had a scholarship up until then, and then I worked to pay off, worked at night and went to school during the day to keep a full class load. But I was like, that's the only reason I did it was for college money, which is why most people, when I was in, that's why most people did it. And of that, there's only one other person I knew who was my best friend, who turned out to be my best friend, who completed their education after the military. Like, it was, I mean, it's weird. Like, there's so many benefits and opportunities and people just don't take them or didn't take them. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I think the GI Bill is like a real driving factor. When I was doing research for my book, A Girl's Guide to Military Service, the education benefits were, I mean, commonly listed as like the most important thing that you get. And I think it's good that they changed the GI Bill to the Forever GI Bill, because when I got out, I had little kids, and I still have my GI Bill, and I'm planning to go back to school, but I guess I probably would have figured out a way to use my benefits, but now that I have the time that I can wait till my kids are older, it's really nice, because I think it was like a 15-year window. It goes by so fast, and then all of a sudden you're like, what just happened? And so I'm really glad they made that change, because I've been out for 10 years, and I'm getting close to my kids are getting older, and I'm getting ready to go back to school, but I'm glad I have that time to figure it out and not have to rush and get it done. Okay, so you got out, and then did you go back to school right away?
Yes, I did go back to school right away, and there's a lot of, so the GI Bill at the time, and I don't know if this has changed, but you couldn't retake classes. But for 5 years, essentially, I hadn't done any math. And I have a master's in engineering. There's a lot of math. But when I got out of the military, I didn't know what a derivative was or what an integral was. One of them is a fraction. You know, one of them has the S thingy. And I remember spending a lot of time to just dedicate to learning, relearning things I should have known. Because I couldn't retake classes, and if you don't use it, you lose it kind of thing, or if you don't build on it, I was like, oh, I got to take differential equations. And I took the whole calculus series 5 years ago, and I don't remember anything. So I totally learned the work ethic. And it's not like I didn't have this work ethic before, but it was like I applied it in the military, where every day I was there when the math lab opened. And for a long time, I was there when it closed, because I had to relearn, you know, a lot of math, to where when I talk to people, oh, you must be good at math because you're an engineer. And I'm like, I want to stab you when you say that, because I worked really hard to understand.
No, I think there are rules, which when I was looking to go back to school, I was like, well, I could get my bachelor's in something like totally different, because my background is engineering, surprisingly, even though I do podcasts. But that's what I did, and now I want to do something different. And my friend was like, no, you have to get your master's, because the military paid for your bachelor's, and they're not going to pay to give you another bachelor's. And so there are rules and, you know, stipulations on what you can use it on. And so it is really important that you understand that. And so, yeah, because I want to go into a totally different career field. And so I would be getting a master's in something related to, you know, marketing and publishing and that genre, or journalism. But it's gonna be interesting, because I'm probably gonna, hopefully all my work will be like hands-on learning, so make it easier. But it is interesting how there's all these, like, it's not like you could just take random classes,
right? So,
like,
yeah,
I get 4 years, I could just go to school and take random stuff. It's like, no, that's not how it works.
And to get a master's or certain classes, you have to have prerequisites, because my undergraduate is mechanical, my master's is biomedical. I had to take prerequisites even in engineering. Like, I had to take anatomy, physiology, like more chemistry, more like seriously. There is prerequisites that are required for every major that is different. If I got a master's in mechanical, I'd be fine. But any variation. So yeah, I think a strong topic has been that the military, like, whether or not the understanding, and it can be people too, of that families, like when you deploy, that you might need more time to get your family plan together. That doesn't mean you need to get kicked out or whatever. But I think that's also true. There could be reasons, and you could justify why you would need to spend, you would want to get another bachelor's. There's no reason why it's not valid. Do you know what I mean? Like, it, but I can understand, like, it's hard to explain, but I think it's the same thing. If you're dealing with people, it makes it, it's very military. The military is so much like life. It's like there's people, and there's those people you go to, and there's people you don't go to. And there's people who are going to understand you and work with you, and there's other people who aren't. And it's hard when it's just on a piece of paper, and those are the rules.
And it's black and white, and you're like, no, there's a lot of gray area in there that we should talk about. Because it is, I mean, I guess the idea is, if you get your degree in, you know, one thing, that you're gonna get the next, you know, degree in something similar, but that's not really how life works, you know. And especially in today's age, I think people want to do different things. And when you're 20 something, like, what you want to do then is different than when you're, you know, 20 years later when you're 40 something.
Well, and to the, there's this concept that I've been introduced to called ikigai, about what like sets your soul on fire. Like what's going to get you, make you spring out of bed in the morning and blah, blah, blah. I barely found that in my 40s. I don't know how you're expected to know that at 18 when you sign those papers. And it takes intestinal fortitude to get an engineering degree, any degree, I assume. But I think it takes less if you're purpose driven. If that's, and I'm going to talk like that's one of your things is to like ask what you're, to keep in mind your North Star, to like, where are you headed? So like, it's great if the military is where you're headed, but that's only 20 years. I hope. Like, not for everybody, but what after that? What's your North Star? What's going to keep you? And I don't know what my, I totally thought happiness will happen after you get your bachelor's degree, after you get this promotion, after you get the, that's not how it works. But I didn't know that at 18.
Yeah, I mean, even just my passion for military women, and I've tried to like deviate, and then it's like, no, this other thing, it feels like work, but like history and focusing on women veterans and women who are serving, it doesn't feel like work. And so it's funny because even though I'm like really deep into it, sometimes I'm like, oh, that looks like fun. And then I'm like, no, it's not actually fun. It's not where I'm supposed to be.
I totally get that. I totally understand on a level I cannot explain. Like there was things I liked about being a generator mechanic. I would go do my thing and a generator would start. It was instantaneous. But I didn't have that as an engineer. It was like I had all this skill set, but I definitely didn't leak out of bed in the morning. I didn't have that feeling like, and I had this feeling like I'm not using my potential to the greatest I could use it. And I think that there's a lot of that. Like if you can draw a line to where you need to, the universe wants you, that's where you're going to go. And I think it's important to be able to have that for yourself, to go on when it gets hard. And I think it gets hard no matter what. Life gets hard. I mean, that's one of my favorite quotes. It's from Rocky that, you know, it's not who punches the hardest, life. It's not you. And he's talking to Apollo Creed. It's not you. It's not me. It's life. And what, it's not who punches the hardest, but it's who can go the furthest and, you know, keep going while being punched. And I think it's important to keep that in mind, but to always know what direction you're going to go in, because you're going to be punch drunk, you know, like, life is going to hit you in the face. There's times you need to keep in mind what you want.
So you got your degree in mechanical engineering, and then it sounds like it wasn't really like something you were passionate about. Like it was something that you did, or, and then you switched and you got your master's, and now you're doing something still engineering related, but in a different sphere, not mechanical.
So what I did for the most part as a mechanical engineer for a lot of great companies, what I automated things. So like I would automate very manual intensive jobs. First job I had was at a brewery. So, you know, if you can imagine brewers moving hoses from this place to that, it was very, you know, and it's not, people are like, oh, technology taking jobs. Not really. There isn't enough people who could do a job, and technology doesn't have a Monday or a Friday or have a long lunch, or its girlfriend doesn't, or its husband doesn't, whatever. Like there's not, it's not human. So I learned what I could, but I found out that, again, that North Star, I didn't have it at that point, but I was really worried about, okay, I need to stay. I didn't, this was the first time I ever had a copay for like medical insurance, right? Like I didn't know what that was. It was like, see the doctor, it's $30. What? It wasn't $30 then. I think it was like $15. But I was like, what? Huh? Like, I don't know what you're talking. I understand the words coming out of your mouth. And basically it was you owe it. So it was like all these things I didn't know. And I didn't like, I kept, engineering is a field that you can always find something to do. I always found work that taught me stuff. And I ended up working at a spinal implant and instrument company. Like I designed a whole set of spinal implants and instruments. And I was like, I like this. This is what I want to do. And I headed down that path. And I ended up becoming a biomedical engineer after that point. But I think, and then what, I started my own business in, after my mom fell in 2018. And what really frustrated me was, okay, I'm not a caregiver. So I go, because I have aging, like my parents are the age they are, and I don't, it's a whole thing. But I go, and I'm not a caregiver, but I'm watching all the caregivers, and I'm like, not, the activities of daily living, including toileting, the standard of care is a healthcare worker accompanies you, right? And that includes toileting. So, and that was what happened with me when Bai was in Bosnia. It was no better. But in Bosnia, I had an entire UN nursing staff dedicated to me. And my mom didn't have that. So I had this experience and I had a master's in engineering and I had automated stuff and I figured out how to automate the ability to go to the bathroom by yourself. So Bustle Biomedical is developing the Upward Mobility, which is a device that's controlled by artificial intelligence, machine learning, and sensors so that healthcare workers can prioritize other tasks and people can, you know, conduct the activities of daily living like toileting independently. So that's what I'm doing now and that's my North Star. But it was like when that happened, I was like, well, I'll just go work for who's ever doing that. And then I was like, oh, no one's doing it. And then it was like, okay, and then what do I do? And it got to a point where I was like, well, if not me, then who? So that's the whole thing. But that's why I, you know, basically started the business.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's something that's so important and something that's really needed. And especially with like the nursing crisis that we have right now with not having enough nurses, having a technology that can take that over, which is, you know, time intensive, takes, you know, and it gives the person who needs that support, you know, more independence because they can do it. So that's really cool. And I like that you're like, no one else was doing it. So I was like, I guess I have to.
Well, it's so embarrassing to talk about. But like when I was in the, I was 20 years old and I was in a UN hospital and I had this nurse that was fabulous, but she didn't speak that much English. And she's like, you can't go home until you go to the bathroom. I couldn't go to the bathroom because you're standing here. Like, poop. I'm just going to say it. And it's like this whole thing. There's things that to keep even the military does, you know, a lot of walls are broken down. But that was like, no, you don't want that situation. And I was like, I remembered that from when I was 20 and I saw my mom suffering. Like my mom went into the rehab facility, 110 pounds. She came out 99. 10 years, almost 10 years later. How many years later? It's 2024. It was 2018. So math is hard. My mom to this day has not gained all that weight back. I think she's like 103 now or 100. I don't know. It's not like I weigh my mom, but she's a tiny little woman. She's always been a tiny little woman, but it's like when I hug her, it's like, oh, I can feel the ribs in your back. It's weird. She left with her hip fixed, but a lot of other infections. And there's just a lot of health problems that happen when you hold it.
That's awesome. I'm glad that you found your passion and that you, you know, that you're following it and doing something that's so needed. So have you used any resources from like the veteran community to help you as you've grown your small business?
IVMF has this entrepreneurship boot camp for veterans. And I went to a specific one for veterans with disabilities in Connecticut, University of Connecticut. And I met a lot of great people there. In fact, ended up writing a book on imposter syndrome and submitted several stories. But several of the stories, two of them were from that entrepreneurship boot camp for veterans. And then I went through a Bunker Lab cohort. And I don't know if you're familiar with Bunker Lab, but they do transition really well. And that's a good resource, actually. They have a podcast also called The Transition with Michael Stedman. And yeah, but I turned away from when I got out of the military. And I can look back differently now and say, okay, it was probably imposter syndrome. But when I got out of the military, I totally turned my back on, okay, I was going to be a civilian now. That was just a stepping stone. I'm done with it now. But now I realize those are the funniest, smartest people that I was really close to. I don't want to, that was so much of my identity came from that. And I valued it so much later in life that I don't think it was such an integral part. I don't think it's important. I think it's important to keep to value that. And yeah, like I do use that now, but it was after that realization, right?
I mean, I don't think it's uncommon for veterans to walk away from the military and be like, okay, that was that. And I'm especially women. I definitely had a long period of time when I left the military. I was like, the veteran community, that's not for me. I don't want to be around that. And now I'm like, what was I thinking? Like, those were my people. And so I think that is totally normal. And I think that the VA is really working to help draw more women into the veteran community. And then I think there's a lot of great women veteran focus groups that are also working to like draw more women in, because I think it can be like, I mean, I thought, I don't want to go to the VFW and hang out with old guys who don't appreciate my service. And that was what my perception of the veteran community was like, even though I never went to the VFW, I never like found out what it was like, but I just didn't want to put myself in that situation. But I have found the veteran community to be so supportive and so helpful. Males, females, doesn't matter. It's just a great place, and it's just been really helpful in my journey as an entrepreneur.
I agree. Yes. Everything you just said. Yes. And I think it's a way to deal with depression and like the loss, the stage of loss, to just walk away, figure it out, get what you got from it, and then just walk away and not, you know, close it off. And I don't, so when I wrote the book, they said, don't write from scars, not wounds. But I think it doesn't heal and make a scar if you just walk away. And I don't know that it's a scar even now, because I do have a kindred spirit with people who have served and who know what it's like to put yourself in harm's way and to maybe not have a super amount of patriotism, but to have an allegiance to the person sitting next to you and to have awkward conversations and be stuck in awkward situations. And, you know, to have that soft, they talk about the marketable soft skills. And it's like, you know, I had weird conversations after the military, but nothing as uncomfortable as I had while I was in. Right. So I do think there's a value in that, and to be able to recognize it. And there's people who are not going to understand you like another veteran, another female veteran.
For sure. Yeah. I'm about to lead a group next year for a volunteer program that I'm in charge of. And I'm acutely aware that I am the only veteran in the room. And so I've been telling them, like, it was trained by the military. If I become too military, you need to tell me, because I'm just going to keep going down this path because this is like how I was trained. But I want you guys to like, I'm like, please tell me if I'm, you know, going, because I'm not going to know. And so, but I, when I'm around veterans, I don't have to have this like little speech of like, I was trained by the military. We just go and we don't have to worry about like, you know, all the things that come along with being around civilians. And I love these ladies. It's just funny because like now I'm in the leadership role and I'm like, if I'm like steamrolling over you, I'm sorry. Just tell me like, hey, you're being too military.
Yes. And so, God, I hate that. One of the negative things that I picked up from the military, and it's only viewed negative outside the military, is my use of profanity. And I feel instantly a kindred spirit with somebody who is in the military, and I feel more at ease, like, because of their language and their sense of humor. This dark sense of humor, other people think I'm crazy or whatever, but they think it's funny. Like, you know what? I don't know how to articulate that, but it's not shared. I think there's a certain amount of outlook on life that you have when you have this sense that you're in harm's way, and so is this person next to you, and you're going to make jokes because, you know, you're going to make jokes.
Yeah, I think that is really a great way to talk about it. And I don't know, did we miss it? Actually, one thing, you have your book, like you showed it to me before the interview. So can you show it and say the title so that if people want to get it?
The book is the Seat for Me. And I have the website, www.istheseatforme. If you just enter your information on the website, it's like a landing page. We can exchange some emails. Let's talk.
Awesome. Yeah.
Talk email.
Talk via email. I love that. So I'll link to that in the show notes so that people can find it, because I think that's a great resource. And then I also will highlight your business, because who knows, maybe people want to learn more about it. Is there anything else from your time in the military? And don't worry, I still have my last question. Or your time after the military that you want to talk about before I ask my last question?
I want to say this about the military. There's so many things. I joined it for a stepping stone in my career, right? Like to get college money specifically. But I learned so many soft skills and I had so many awkward conversations. But I also read so many books that I would not have read otherwise, and got to know people I wouldn't have gotten to know otherwise. And I think that that's important. That's all.
That is important. And that really builds onto my next question, which is, what advice would you give to a young woman who's considering joining the military?
I just think it's important to keep your North Star, and that North Star is true to you. So that your military job is your military job. Do it and do it well, right? And if the military, what happened to me, I got it injured, right? And I got out after 4 years. Some people do 20 years, but that doesn't mean your North Star changes. Still pursue your goals. Your goals might change. Find your ikigai. That ikigai is just a Japanese thing for passion for living. Like, probably you don't know that now, but you might find it. That's all.
Yeah. And I feel like I've thought of this book so many times, because every time you say North Star, I'm like, there's a really good book. Now I'm like trying to remember her name. Maybe that's why I can't. But the book is called Finding Your North Star, and it goes through a bunch of different exercises to help you figure out what your North Star is. So if you're like, I have no idea what I'm passionate about, what I'm interested in, I would recommend getting that book. So I'll link to it in the show notes. It's been a few years, so I'm like, it's a female author, and I've read more than one of her books, but her name is just eluding me. But it's such a good book. It requires a lot of writing and exercises to help you find out what that is. So if you're like, I don't know what I want to do, and I have no idea how to figure out what it is, I recommend checking out that book.
I will, honestly, any resource. When I was floundering trying to figure out why or how or whatever, I was doing graduation, like speeches or whatever, like people who are inspiring. And I'd be inspired for like, I don't know, half a day, depending on how good the speaker was, which, by the way, University of Texas, Admiral McCraven does a really good one, 2014, I think. Anyway, I was a connoisseur. That's one of the things you can email me about, or we'll exchange emails about. I'm a connoisseur of good commencement speeches. The moral of the story is to make them short, make them impactful and short.
Try not to say anything too controversial.
Yep.
So thank you so much for being a guest on the podcast, for sharing your story, and for the work that you're doing. I'm really glad that we got connected. I'm excited maybe one day to meet you in the future in person, not just via digital.
Exactly. Yes. Thank you, Amanda. Thank you. Likewise.